right now on Earwolf. The Neighborhood Listen is back for season two. Join Bernd, Joan, and of course Doug for more zany happenings with the neighbors of Dignity Falls. For more, follow at Earwolf on social media. Happy listening.
Hey everyone, this is Paul Scheer from How Did This Get Made, and I just wanted to remind you that you can find all of How Did This Get Made's archive and ad-free episodes on Stitcher Premium. For a free one-month trial of Stitcher Premium and access to a ton of great content, just go to stitcherpremium.com and use the code BONKERS. That's BONKERS, that's the code, for a one-month free trial of Stitcher Premium. Do it. Hey, everybody. I just wanted to give you a heads up that we had a little bit of a sound glitch when we recorded this episode. So the volume on my mic might be a little bit different than normal. We apologize for that, but we didn't realize it until it was already too late. And we didn't want to go back and just ADR my voice and make it sound incredibly weird. Cessnas and sex. Yeah, we saw Deadly Mile High Club. So you know what that means.
Now it's time for let's wallow in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? I am Tall John Scheer. And boy, oh boy, we have a great episode for you today. It is like Fatal Attraction in the sky. A flight instructor becomes obsessed with her student. She does everything she can to wreck his life, to bring him closer to her. It's sexy. It's crazy. It is one of my favorite movies that we have done in such a long time. I mean, it's got a little bit of Money Plane in there too, but to help break it all down, I am employing my two co-hosts, like always. Please welcome Mr. Jason Mantzoukas.
Wow. I mean, this was exciting because, you know, this is what true love looks like. You know, this is like when you find your person and, you know, you gotta do everything in your power to make them understand that you are number one, baby.
I can't tell you how much I enjoyed this film.
This was a blast.
There is something, it's just scratching an itch that I need scratched in this time.
So I am watching right now. I don't know where this aired or what this was. I watched it on Amazon Prime, but
yep.
I am currently watching as comfort food during quarantine, old episodes of Magnum PI.
Oh.
And what I have discovered, because I'm watching, they air two episodes of Magnum PI per day on the Hallmark Mysteries and Movies channel. And I think that's Mysteries and Murders, maybe it's called. Anyway, that my point being that so it's got commercials. And every time Magnum PI goes to commercial, it's to advertise a movie or a TV series just like this that I've never heard of. They'll be like, this weekend, a movie marathon of like Witch House Incorporated. And it'll be like all 60 episodes of Witch House Incorporated. And I'm like, what are these shows? It's crazy. This feels like one of those movies. Like, it's nuts.
And I feel like there's one on the who has been begging us to do more of these films, and that is my other co-host. Please welcome Miss June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
I'm okay. How are you, Paul?
I'm doing fine.
Okay.
I'm okay.
All right, good.
I feel like this movie would be right up your alley. No?
No, it definitely was. I mean, I love a plane movie. This movie went places I wasn't expecting it to go.
Yes. Oh,
and yeah. I tip my hat to this film.
Your pink fedora? Do you tip your pink fedora to this
film? I'm feeling so nervous, and I wrote this down. I said, make sure we have enough time because I need to spend less.
I could talk about just wardrobe choices. The pink fedora is what I looked it up. The pink fedora was number two on the call sheet.
I mean, that pink fedora,
it's a character
pink
in the
fedora
movie.
Really brought it up the entire film.
You know, those actors, you know, sometimes as an actor, you find that article of clothing or that something that really helps you inform your character.
It's like you work outside in. you know, and you don't know who you are. And then someone gives you a purse and gives you a pink fedora, and it all
those touchstones.
In.
It really yep. all sits settles into place. For him, it's an open Henley. For her, it's a pink fedora. Each of
By the
them
way,
expressing their characters through wardrobe choices expertly.
They need to use the pink fedora because it plays a part in the grand plan of the film, a big miscommunication. But to get it to play second act, they need to push it so hard in the beginning that she's wearing it indoors.
She's wearing it all the time. And
all
not only
the
that,
time.
She's not only wearing it all the time, every single top she wears is also pink. She wears a pink hoodie.
Jason.
She wears
She
wears a pink hoodie. She wears a different pink hoodie with shoulder cutouts.
Cutouts. Hold, please. Pause.
You put a sweatshirt on. You put a sweatshirt on because you're cold. You know what you don't want? Bare shoulders.
Well, that I mean, we're talking about it.
We're getting
flash dance.
Let's get into it.
Go.
So here's the thing about the pink fedora. Okay, when I was in, I want to say. Third grade. I took jazz and I had jazz recital where we all wore big oversized satin blazers and they were all different fluorescent colors.
Okay.
And then matching fedoras. And I
So this is like a Liza Minnelli kind of scenario.
Exactly.
Right?
And
this
is, And because I think we're all saying, for the viewers at home, for the listeners at home who have not seen this movie, you're thinking, oh, pink fedora. It's a pink fedora. We need to really drill down on the color pink. This is a muted, like, dusty
this is
rose.
Neon it's not a blush. Pink. It's not a blush.
No. This is not a millennial pink.
This is what we call a hard pink.
This is a like a party favor hat. It's a aggressive.
I looked it up. And it's in the Pantone color scheme, it is hard pink.
It is so hard. And there's a black sash around it. It's the two
That's
colors
the band.
Together.
The band
could
color
not,
is black.
It could not be more striking. You can't. So here's the question I have. Okay. So when we first meet our leads, our hero's girlfriend, the long-suffering girlfriend who he's... whose relationship with him is not going well, and she wants a more stable version of our hero, Jake. When
well,
we
Jake
first
is a
meet
dud.
Her, okay,
well, Jake
Jason,
is a
we'll get
big
into it.
Dud.
We'll get into Jake, but
Jake
when
is
we
a straight
first
dud.
Meet her,
yeah.
Like Paul said, she's wearing that pink fedora at the kitchen table, seated, I think, studying.
Yes, she's studying at the kitchen table like a child. She looks young as well, so it is confusing at first. And I will say, as we're talking about duds, she also is a dud, right?
Oh,
I mean, we
of
could,
course.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Although, if I had to spend the rest of my life with one person in this movie, spoiler alert, it's her mother. Nobody expected that.
Margaret all day, every day. Okay, I need to go back to the hat for a second.
Oh, yeah.
So the hat, when we first meet it... When we first meet the hat, she's doing homework and studying. And then she, about like 30 seconds later, she takes it in. And it's so shocking as a viewer to meet someone like this with a hat on like that.
Yeah.
In the inside is so shocking.
I thought they were going to say it's my like good luck charm because it's so...
It's omnipresent.
It's omnipresent.
She wears it every day and night.
Like you needed her to say
for her to have crawled into bed with him wearing the pink fedora. Like
but
it would
the problem
have...
with the pink fedora is you cannot own a hot pink, hard pink fedora, and wear it just willy nilly. I mean, you can't wear it with any other outfits but pink outfits.
Which is exactly what she does. She wears pink.
What she does.
Every wardrobe change she has, it's pink.
Well, June, let me ask you a question. Do you think that she was potentially studying for a jazz recital? I mean, could that be? Because I feel like then it would make sense. Was she going to school for jazz?
No, she was going. Wasn't she going back to school for her medical degree or something?
I don't know what she's in school for.
Wait,
but
she's going to medical night school?
No, I don't think it's medical school. She says her professor, but I don't know. Does she ever say what she's studying?
Not important. Not important.
I don't know.
The fact that these two women, though, are both like fighting for the love of this absolute dud makes no sense to me.
He is so muted. I haven't a muted male character in a film like this. And I guess he's like Beefcake because he's always, his shirt is, the Henley is allowing his shirt off. He's always shirt off.
He's like Canadian Hallmark movie good looking, yes. Of course.
Yeah, but no, he's a great looking guy.
But they also, interestingly, I guess, to make him, I guess, perhaps vulnerable, I guess, they make him like not successful and almost ambitionless, you know, so that like he's this hunk, but he's like kind of a dud. So like his wife's not interested in him. And then the Tanya, the flight instructor, becomes obsessed with him. And it's suddenly like there's an invisible tug of war going on for like, for Beefcake Zero. I don't know.
It's not even that. It's just so strange. Like I've never seen someone so lifeless. Like he is neither here nor there.
Yeah.
He is not, he is dim. He is, just
well, we understand
there.
That he's like that. The movie introduces this idea. He took a job at his mother-in-law's business, you know,
and he lighting doesn't fixtures. Jesus,
lighting
that
fixtures.
Makes lighting
exactly.
And
the lighting
it seems
fixtures
like his
business.
High-level job is doing inventory, which seems to be the job which is the lowest on the totem pole. Like, he doesn't have, like, a behind-the-desk job. Clearly, they only had one location, which was, like, a warehouse location.
Yeah.
Because he should. Like, he's in, at a certain point, it's established that he takes control of the company. Like, you wouldn't go from inventory to running. Like, there's not, like, unless there's only four people who work there, he is the lowest man in the totem pole.
Yeah, and what we're meant to believe is that, like, he discovers his true passion, which is flying, which, by the way, in order to become a pilot, even at the level of small Cessna planes, never mind the fact that later in the movie, he, a man obviously in his mid-30s, thinks he's going to somehow go to, like, fly F-18s in Top Gun. What are you fucking talking about?
You're not going to go even into still, the Air Force. You're going to fly. You're going to be part of the Blue Angels?
You're not going to be. That's not your future, bro. But
by the
regardless.
Way, I found that to be a little bit sad that he was, like, finding his passion that, like, there was something sad about the realization that he wanted to fly. I don't know. Like, I didn't feel empowered.
Well, because it was hopeless.
It
was hopeless. Like, he finds this thing that he becomes, finally, he finds the thing that interests him. But his behavior doesn't belie any more interest than, I'll do this. Yeah, okay. Yeah, this seems good.
It seems like, honestly, he walked into it because he had a jacket that was like a flight jacket.
He saw Top Gun and was like, you know, I like this. He saw it with commercials just like Jason and was like, you know what, maybe I should do this. Let me just walk it back because I knew we were in for a treat. When this movie, it opens in a cockpit, there's trauma going on. You know, the airplane is in disarray and it's the crash. And then we wake up. The woman who was in the cockpit, she's bloody. She's on a table. I was like, she's a little too bloody because it looks like she'd been in the hospital for quite some time, like in a coma. But they immediately tell her that her partner, her co-pilot, did not survive. Like that nurse.
Her first question upon waking up from a coma is, where is he or what is he okay or something like that? And the nurse is like, oh, who? The guy in the plane with you? Oh, no, he's dead.
Yeah, he didn't survive.
They callously.
I thought she was a doctor, but.
I mean, could it have been a doctor?
Was it a doctor? Sorry. The doctor says he's dead. You know, like the reveal is because they're not, they're like, oh, you're awake? They're surprised.
Her face is still bleeding and they're like, oh, he's dead.
Tanya, I'm Dr. Hammond. You're in Mammoth Hospital. You were in a plane crash. Do you remember?
Where is he?
The man who was in the plane with you? He didn't survive. I'm sorry.
He goes, he didn't survive. Beat beat.
Oh yeah.
Like this
6 months later.
This it cuts jazzy, to like, 6 months later. Those music pops on with like this guitar solo. I'm like, what is going on here? Like, that is such an abrupt change of tone. And they do this multiple times in the movie, that kind of guitar, like, it's like, and this Jake, we meet Jake. And yeah, that could have happened. I mean, I also felt like, why? Yeah, we just jumped time. I mean, it's so bizarre. It's so
the
bizarre.
Juxtaposition of tones. What? Because the movie, that cold open is like a harrowing plane crash, right?
Yes.
A really like intense plane crash. And when Tanya wakes up and is told that her original Jake, because that is the crux that this movie hinges on, apparently, is
the
that
name.
The name Jake being so similar, and that he's both, they're both handsome. Like, Tanya becomes fixated that this new Jake is somehow her old Jake returned to him or something.
Even though
her,
they're essentially the same age. Let me ask you a question, because I'm bad at this. You know, so the original Jake dies, and then she meets the new Jake, and you see her on her computer at one point, the flight instructor, and she's looking at pictures of her and her Jake, and then she somehow has a picture of new Jake, even though he just kind of audited this very small flight class made up of the weird. It's like the night school of flight classes that he shows up to.
I know. I mean, it doesn't seem like you should be able to take flight school as just like continuing education.
Yeah. The way that she teaches the flight school, she shows him a manual and she's like, all right, here are some of the gears you're going to be looking at in the airplane. They're like, wait, that's lesson one is gear.
Yeah, every single lesson, I don't understand why this is part of it. So much of it is to seed things that are going to come to bear later, like the Pelican case that's the first aid kit that has a like 1 liter bottle of chloroform.
I missed that. Why do they need that in?
Why?
There?
That is not in a first aid kit.
Simply so that she can use the chloroform later to chloroform Annie. But I was like, oh boy, here's Chekhov's chloroform here, because the idea that it's like this, I got to walk you through every item in a first aid kit during flight school. Oh, here's a bottle of chloroform.
It's like, why did I pay all this money for this flight school? All I'm doing is getting like weird.
In case you need one, here is a wooden box that could be a coffin. That's part of learning to fly.
That's what I thought that they were doing with the hat. And I know they wanted to like confuse us and say, oh, this is that thing she has. This is her hat. But if the whole thing was like, oh, we're going to strategically have Tanya hire actors.
Oh my God.
Hire actors to head over to Annie's house while she's not there, while she's, I guess, at class with the professor, who I think maybe she did fuck, or
I remember when Tanya shows him pictures that she took when she flew over, and there was they were by the pool.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
I think that actually is Annie and the professor.
No, because no, Annie says she hired us again and we had to do something even more steamy. But I will say,
okay,
those pictures
then.
That she gets from the plane are satellite pictures. Like, she would have had to have been circling so low for so long, because it covers, I would say that scene that she has pictures of covers about a 10-minute period. And she must have just been with that Cessna just flying over an apartment complex.
But this is what's so crazy. But the filmmakers thought, okay, in order to identify Annie or to have this misdirect work, she's going to have to be in a hard pink fedora.
And not just once. With our the filmmakers assume
in a sweatshirt, she's gonna have to be in that fedora and a bikini. She's always gonna have to.
But by the way, what a boom for the flight instructor to have such an easy way to hide her face. Like, I mean, if I was trying to wreck this marriage, it was 10 times easier because she wore that fedora all the time.
I feel like the filmmakers assumed the audience is so stupid that they're clobbering you over the head with stuff like the pink fedora, like the chloroform, like all of these things, like every moment where somebody's like, new Jake says to Tanya, when he's like, oh, you know what? I have to quit your flight school. He's like emotionless.
Yep.
He's like, oh yeah, I got to quit your flight school because I'm going to go take flying lessons from Gonzo. What's his name?
Oh,
who's going to teach me how to be an F-18 pilot. I'm going to his, his open stunt class that's on Saturday.
By the way, his open hangar. They have an open hangar. We're going to have an open hangar this weekend.
It's like a full description that like just lets you understand that, okay, now Tanya can show up and sabotage the plane.
By the way, when Gonzo is talking about Tanya, because they are small plane instructor rivals, crosstown rivals of the Cessna flight instructor schools, he's like, oh, yeah, hear about her. Yeah, her and her boyfriend crashed, and she was a drooling mess. Like, he made fun of her for literally being in a plane accident and recovering. Like, she was just in her own drool. It's like, this is a terrible way to describe someone who is a survivor of a terrible airplane crash.
You are, can you not, sir, who also flies small planes, empathize with what's going on here? Like,
well,
isn't
that's
this
so strange? Is the entire barometer for whether or not you're a good pilot or a pilot instructor, flight instructor in this movie is have you crashed a plane before?
Yes.
They've all crashed.
Like, there's no third way to decide.
Can we just be honest and say, I'm not a pilot, but I do believe, well, sorry, June, this time that took you up, we're not kosher.
You guys aren't kosher?
No.
I thought
we don't keep kosher.
You don't keep a kosher home? No, I misunderstood. I'm sorry.
But if she crashed in this Cessna like we see in the beginning, she would be dead. I mean, right? Like if boyfriend was dead or her husband was dead, like I don't know how you
avoid. Some people do survive plane crashes.
I mean,
that's why I always try to book a seat at the back of the plane. We have a better chance of surviving back there.
Absolutely.
Well, but they're both in the cockpit, though, June. Like, it wasn't like they were both on a flight. They were both in the cockpit, and it seemed to be that thing was nosediving into the ground.
Oh, yeah. That crash easily killed both of those people. There's no way.
Yeah.
She's not even, frankly, in the hospital, she's not even intubated. She's not even like, she seems to just be in like a whiplash collar and nothing else.
She looked like she was rear-ended, like leaving a Target parking lot, not someone who was in a small plane
like
crash.
Like a nosedive that ended in the death of her beloved. And when she says to him, I'm sorry, you know, she says in that opening, I'm sorry, I thought we could outrun the storm. What are you talking about? There is no outrunning a storm. What?
Oh, my God. These are reckless pilots.
Yeah. I mean, JFK Jr. should never have gone up there that day.
All right.
These are the lessons that people are not learning.
Yep.
Wild Basin Boozy Sparkling Water is a craft hard seltzer with unique and adventurous flavors packaged in a fun, convenient variety of 12 packs. I love my Wild Basin Boozy Sparkling Water. I've gotten into the Boozy Sparkling Water. I think it's delicious. You grab an original mix pack or the new berry mix pack, and you can try the refreshing flavors like strawberry coconut, lemon agave hibiscus, and blueberry mango. It's great on hot days when you want to have something that's refreshing, but also, you know, get the party started. Wild Basin Boozy Sparkling Water is crafted and canned at the Oscar Blues Brewery, a Colorado-based brewery known for their boundary-pushing, flavor-packed beers. Wild Basin is no exception with their unique flavors like Yumberry and Melon Basil. Oh, I like that Melon Basil. They're all in recyclable cans. And Wild Basin is made for active, energetic folks who value the outdoors, socializing with friends, and healthier living. So they can keep on running wild. That's right. Each 12-ounce can is only 100 calories, 1 gram of carbs, and 5% alcohol. And the flavors are natural. They're vegan and gluten-free. Get on this. I'm going to tell you, I had this in my fridge, and people were like, wait, what is this? This is delicious. It's so good. I have a few friends that are doing keto, and they're drinking this. They are having the time of their lives. I'm drinking it. Still hot here in LA. So it is my new drink of choice. So for more boozy sparkling water refreshment, find Wild Basin near you at wildbasinboozywater.com/podcast. That's wildbasinboozywater.com/podcast.
Can we go back to the mom? Because one of the first characters we meet here is the mother of Jake's wife, who to me was a over-the-top Mad TV character. Like I say, like it's not like she's not an over-the-top Mad TV character, but if she brought that character to Mad TV, they would say, you're over-the-top. That's what I mean. Like, she is in a full outfit. Like, she looks like she's dressing for a Groundling show.
She's in the she's in the Sunday Company.
I'm like, tone it down,
but,
please.
See, I felt like, see, that's interesting. I had the opposite reaction. Yes, I thought she was enormous, but I was like, finally, somebody's doing something in this
Some
movie
life.
Other than murderous Tanya, who has a lot of quiet rage going on. Like when she abducts Jake to Palm Springs, when she literally under false pretenses kidnaps him, brings him to Palm Springs to like be like, surprise, now we're on a date.
Under the guise of bringing a box of airplane parts to a skydiving school. Wait, yes. Hold on. So you are now like a trucker? You're now like a, like what?
She's a long haul trucker.
Flight instructor is like, I have to bring a box of airplane parts to a skydiving
school. And then later she says, I have to bring this box of fish food and dump it in the ocean.
Her lying about the fish food is my favorite part because she looks like she knows that she's lying. Like she's saying, like she's making the faces that you make when you're on a phone when no one can see your face. She's like,
yes. Well, that's what I mean. The filmmakers don't trust the audience so much that everybody has to telegraph their emotional state and their scene partner, in this case, Jake, has to not notice it. So it only makes Jake more stupid because Tanya, in this instance, is acting super sketchy and weird. And he's like, oh, that's so interesting. Can I open it?
I mean, I didn't think Jake could look any stupider than he started off, but he does. I mean, and Jake's turn at the end, and I don't want to spoil too much about the ending right now, but his turn at the end where we get to see him like really fly a plane is so... It's like, I don't like seeing Jake without life, and I don't like seeing Jake with life. I don't like seeing him just sort of sad. I don't like seeing him happy. Like, there's nothing, I've never seen an actor, and I hate to disparage his acting, but it's like, there's nothing coming off of you.
No, it's a tough role to play, and I think that he really did connect to the dead inside character, but he never really became alive when the things happened, because
I really think he connected to the dead inside character. He really conveyed
a lifeless, soulless
living.
When he says to the instructor, this is the saddest moment in the entire movie. It's, I would imagine, class number two, because it's the second time he's back at class with his flight instructor. And he goes, yeah, be honest with me. How am I doing? How are you doing on day two? You're not doing good. You're not going to be a pilot. Like, that's like if you had some day two of medical school, like, will I ever be a surgeon? There's no way I could possibly ever tell you because you're so far away from that end.
Here's the thing about Jake. So I do think that the script tells a different story of what we ended up getting as an audience. Because at one point, Margaret says to Jake, you know, wipe that ADD grin off your face. And they paint a picture of him. Annie paints a picture of him. Like, Jake's all over the fucking place. Like, Jake can't hold anything down. Like, Jake is sort of pursuing every whim. And that is not the person we see before us.
No.
He is not a carefree.
He is he appears to me to be sleepwalking through life.
Yes. Yes. I wish Jake had an ADD grin. And I don't even know what that means.
Jake is a model for like Land's End catalog. Like that's the amount of life that you see out of him. Just like you put a nice pair of khakis on him and a button down, and that's living.
No, listen.
No, a Henley. It's always a Henley.
Sorry, yes.
Now, Jake shaves his chest.
Yeah.
Okay. Ew.
I mean, we don't see him do that, but...
No, but he has a lot of chest stubble.
I will say that his side muscles were really defined. Like, the
side muscles? What do you mean his side
muscles?
I know you're very into working out, Paul, so I'm assuming that is the specific muscle you're talking
by
about.
By the way, I am up in that Peloton taking these core classes, and they say this word a million times. I'm forgetting what it is.
It's abductors, obliques.
Your abductors.
Yes.
No. June is right. It's your abductors.
I was going to say his obliques are very defined. Thank you, Molly, for helping
me
with
my abductors. Ooh, I worked out so hard. My abductors are going crazy.
They're so muscle. They're so,
the abductors are a very big part.
I pulled one of my abductors.
That's more in your hips. And by the way, I did too. That's why I had a limp for a long time.
That's what I was going to say, Paul. I've heard you bitch about an abductor.
Yeah, I know all about the abductors.
So he shaves his chest and nobody, we're just all okay with that?
Oh, well, I mean, I think that's the kind of man that we are used to in a movie like this.
That's the aesthetic for this type of, I think that's the aesthetic for this type of dream hunky guy, is that he is smooth and jacked and chiseled.
Well, but he's not smooth. I mean, listen, Jessica Sinclair and I have already talked about it, but, you know, we've already said we want all the hair or none of the hair. He has, like, stubble hair.
Wait, you've seen stubble on his chest?
I didn't notice that.
I didn't see that.
If he was smooth like a Ken Barbie, that's fine.
I didn't see that stubble.
Tons of stubble. It looked painful when she has her head on his chest. In that scene, it looks like it hurts to be there.
Do you think that the filmmakers, and I love that we are calling them filmmakers because they also call their actors the players in the credits. The filmmakers, do you think that they looked at him and said, you know, you don't have enough hair to be a hairy guy like an Alec Baldwin, and you don't have too little hair. We gotta put you in the shave machine. Like, and they did that before because he is without shirt. As much as we can get, and there's no, and there's not a lot of opportunities for him to be without shirt, so they really have to work it in a lot.
I will say that their sex scenes, or their near sex scenes too, including the Palm Springs scene.
Oh yeah,
are wild. This is everything we're describing about Jake. That he is kind of passionless and kind of like a dud. Tanya, the flight instructor, is in almost direct opposition. Her face is constantly in motion. Like when he rejects her for the first time in this Palm Springs hotel, and she goes into the bathroom and has like what seems to me to be some sort of complete like physical and mental breakdown where she's screaming into a towel and writhing around. And then later, when he calls her and says, I have to quit the school, I'm going to Gonzo school, and she, like, falls off of her bed and is, like, clutching at she is, like, everything is happening to her in an enormous way. And so that juxtaposition was amazing.
Like, do you think it's like some sort of like meters going across the screen? It's like, you know, you're doing so much acting, we got to pull back all the other actors. You've used up all of our acting points. Like, we've built our movie on these.
She's done it all. She's taking all the emotion. She's taking all the gestures. She's taking all the faces.
It's like building an NBA 2K1 character. Like, I just got to move back these meters.
When she and Margaret are in a scene together, the film almost like spontaneously combusts.
They were not meant to be in the scene. But by the way, that's the movie I want to see, because when she offers Margaret to go flying to Palm Springs, like, I'll save you 3 hours. Oh, I love it. I'm like, what's going to happen here? And that whole scene.
How crazy was it that Margaret basically shows up to her flight school and is like, fuck you. Stay the fuck away from my son-in-law. Yes, he's a piece of shit, but he's married to my beautiful daughter. And then Tanya's like, do you want to take a flight with me? And she's like, 100% yes.
She's like, but by the way, like, she's like, oh, I can save a couple hours. By the way, she's leaving to go to Santa Barbara, it seems, in the darkness of night. So she's not going to get there before 11 p.m. easily. So why is she even going there? And then thought about how she'd get home if she's going to fly up there. But
my favorite moment. I laughed so hard. So when Margaret shows up, outside the airplane for that scene.
No,
when she shows up, not at the air show, but just to have a private audience with Tanya.
After she Googles female flight instructor.
Exactly.
Los Angeles.
When she shows up there to really put her in her place. They first start having a conversation over the wing, and then Margaret takes a long walk to get around the airplane wing and walk over to her. There's moments like that tonally in this movie. I mean, I don't think the filmmakers were going for comedy there, but I was crying.
Oh,
laughing.
There was so much funny. That I agree. And there was so many parts of this that I was cackling because
it was
when Margaret first appeared. T-shirt in the warehouse wearing that plaid, like Christmas plaid.
Yes.
Yes.
Christmas, like British plaid blazer.
That's what I'm saying.
Like a tartan blazer.
A mad TV character. Like you, Kristen Wiig.
She might as well have showed up in a tam o'shanter.
Kristen Wiig has outfits like this when she was on SNL. Like that's the level that she's bringing to this character.
And she is, you know who she is? She is essentially Linda Richman in this movie.
Yes.
The Mike Myers character, Linda Richman.
Very much so.
Coffee Clatch? Was it Coffee Clatch? Yeah. She's that character in this movie. Like it is. If you told me Mike Myers played that part, I would believe.
By the way, that would have been a great comeback. And he goes over, she goes over to her daughter at one point with crumpled up money and goes, here's $2,000. But it looks like a fiver that is like folded over. Here's $2,000. She's dropping $2,000.
I love how willing she is to put Jake on full blast anywhere, anytime. She's always fully, she shows up to the Gonzo flight instructor performance, the open hangar thing, the stunt performance. She shows up at that place just to yell at Jake.
Right.
I know exactly what you're doing.
What am I doing?
You're accusing my daughter of having an affair to cover up the fact that you're having one. Who is it? Is it her? Is he sleeping with you?
Margaret, stop.
I don't like you very much, Jake. You want to know why?
Oh, do tell.
Because you've got the mental capacity of a donut. But for some reason, my daughter's in love with you. And I'll be damned if I'm going to stand back and watch you ruin her life.
And Jake is just watching an air show, and she's in his face being like, you're not, I don't like you, you're stupid, my daughter's in love, in front of like two dozen, and he's like, I'm trying to watch an air show.
By the way, an impromptu air show, because Gonzo even says, like, I don't normally do this, but let me just jump on my plane right now and do some stunts for you guys. My favorite part
and
of the movie.
He's dressed like a World War II flying ace.
Gonzo.
With like a scarf and a flight jacket. He's dressed like old time.
Gonzo is practicing on Cessnas and opened cockpit like bi-wing airplanes. And his claim to fame is he gets the most pilots in commercial airlines. That is simply not the case. No one is going like, I took Gonzo's school and I'm hired by Delta.
Also, I couldn't figure out why seemingly it would appear an enormous part of his business model is to send his employees who appear to be dressed as flight attendants to other schools to poach their students. Like
shot girls.
That's part of what they do for him there's enough business in trying to poach student pilots.
By the way,
I still can't understand why he's so angry at Tanya.
Drooling
so
all over
each other.
Because they're crosstown rivals. The town isn't big enough for two Cessna airplane instructors. The thing that I thought was so crazy, though, was when Tanya goes to his school and looks at his plane to sabotage it. Okay, talk about showing the audience, like, we don't trust you. They just drape a red wire around an engine. And she's like, click. And just clips the red wire like a fucking bomb. But to me, I kept on thinking, like, that plane is not taking off if you clip the red wire. Like, what did that wire do? Like, because it's sort of like, is it the brakes on the airplane? Is that the brake?
If he's a good enough pilot, mustn't he sense something is
you
wrong?
You couldn't take off without using the brakes. And, like, there's so many things to play in an airplane. Like, I think that would show up immediately. I don't know what she cut. Like, and it just seems like, because he's flying well for a long time.
Oh, he's doing loop-de-loops. He's doing, like, genuine impressive, like, stunt pilots, the kind of stuff you see at an air show.
The best,
you know?
CGI in there, where he's like up against the green screen, like, woohoo! Yeah!
Oh my God. He talks to himself in the third person, too. He's like, Gonzo, you did it again. He's like, Gonzo, you son of a bitch, you can't be stopped. Like, it's almost as if he's like setting up his own dramatic death by being like, huh, I still got it.
And it crashes. By the way, these airplanes take off and fly, and they basically hover. Every one of these airplanes hovers because he crash lands directly in front of the of the school. Like, just like, poof. Like, There's a, every plane is nosediving to the ground with pinpoint accuracy.
It's amazing how, like, Jake is basically this kind of agency-less ball, pinball, in the just bumping off the bumpers of all of the characters in this movie. All he does is ricochet between Annie, Annie's mom, his mother-in-law, and Tanya. Like, boom, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. But everywhere he is, he's constantly being bounced around. He's always being told what's happening in the movie. He's always being informed of the plot of the movie and is like, huh, okay, I see, okay, all right. I heard you're having an affair. I have to leave. And so he does.
By the way, even when he has sex with the flight instructor in the airplane on top of essentially his wife in a coffin that he doesn't know, or on top of the fish food, whatever he thinks it is at that point, he doesn't even seem genuinely happy there. Like, his sex scenes don't seem happy either.
Oh my God. When she goes to give him a mid-air blowjob, he says, "Houston, we have a problem." What? That's not the right line. That's what they said in Apollo 13. Like, that's like for like real, that's for like an emergency. "Houston, we have a problem" is like, uh-oh, something bad is happening. It's not like, you don't say, "Houston, we have a problem" when you're about to get blown.
Was
right?
Like, we're breaking the cum barrier. I don't know what he would
say. I would say, "You can't handle the truth." If I'm going to use a movie quote,
I would say, Goose.
We're in a flat spin. Yeah.
Oh, by the way, oh my gosh, I don't want to jump too far ahead, but even at the end when he regains control of the airplane, he decides he's going to buzz her. Like, he's like, he buzzes just like Top Gun. Oh, he buzzes a human being with his jet that he's driving.
Well, it's like North by North. It's like the scene in North by Northwest, when the crop duster is coming after Cary Grant in the middle of the cornfields. But this is a Gulfstream. This is a jet. Like, you can't. He's trying to. He's also an amateur pilot. He's been doing this for. It takes you
couple
years.
Weeks.
It takes you
couple
years
weeks and
to
he's
become
got it.
A pilot. He's maybe 3 weeks. The movie takes place over what, 3 weeks?
I guess. I mean, I'll give
maybe a month.
Maybe. Oh my God. And his big plan was just knocking her down. Like, if I just knock her down for a second, she'll be fine. She's not blown off.
So that the police can, I guess, so that the police can pick her up. But the police are already there and she's in the middle of like the desert.
Oh my God. Well, her trying to avoid being hit by a plane was. Again, I laughed so fucking hard at that, at her running in circles, trying to avoid being hit by a plane.
She parachuted out of that plane a long time ago, right? And then the plane is spiraling because they take off autopilot. And then the girlfriend is like unscrewing, or the wife is unscrewing. She's getting
Why
out.
Why would you put the latch so that the screws are on the inside of the box? I guess she didn't build the box.
But at the same time, like, she is unscrewing that with a crazy amount of speed. Then
that plane would have crashed instantly.
But that plane is flying forward, and yet when you see the distance, they're about 50 feet apart. They're not only 50 feet apart, but they immediately ID where she is, the evil flight instructor, to go back and buzz her and call the cops. And I didn't know that pilots can just have an automatic, like, if a pilot calls and says, "Send in the cavalry," they'll be there. Yeah. Like, there's no explanation of why.
I mean, I had the same thought. Like, why is she being arrested? He's not a pilot.
Right. No, he wouldn't know to do that.
Well, I mean, like, theoretically, she should be being arrested for multiple murders.
But just on what grounds at this point?
Wait, is it multiple or just one? Just one murder?
Oh, I guess just one murder. And
you don't think she should be charged for Gonzo's death?
Yeah, Gonzo and Margaret, and I mean, at least manslaughter for Jake, involuntary manslaughter.
Well, I guess
for Jacob. So Jacob
won. Oh, Jake, yeah. Jake won.
I mean, I would also say that probably she would get charged with like kidnapping and the intent to commit a murder with the wife, because she did put her in a coffin, chloroform her, and then was going to.
I got another charge for her, actually. So when she hires those models, when the model's being interviewed later on by Annie and sort of telling her that, you know, she thought the whole setup was shady, it did seem like that model had sex with whoever that other model was.
No, that was like, that's what you said. We had to get a little bit more like spicy. I felt like,
right, because when later on Jake is looking at those pictures, it looks like he's looking at photographs of two people having sex at the pool.
Yeah, because his eyes. Yeah, his eyes. That's the moment where we see the most life in him, when his eyes open up. I would say that moment and the moment where he offers up Doritos to. that, I mean, by the way, that's a good place to work. They have Doritos in the fridge. Like, come on, like, yeah, hey, not like, bad.
Oh my God.
Here's how much the movie. The filmmakers don't trust that the audience is going to get it. When Annie goes next door and discovers the Ring doorbell.
Oh, the commercial for Ring? The full-on commercial for Ring.
Yeah. So when she goes to the neighbor's house and realizes, oh, this neighbor has one of these video doorbells and it's been recording the whole time. She's like, oh, can I look at that tape? Okay. She immediately finds the footage, right, of the imposter, the actors who have come in the pink fedora, in a different pink fedora, to impersonate her to make it seem as though. So she, what then happens for Annie is it triggers a series of memories for her, right? And she's looking both at the footage and then she has a memory of Tanya in the cockpit texting the actors. Like, they so don't trust that you're going to make the connection that they put in a shot that Annie would have absolutely no knowledge
of. Now, by the way, when she is talking to the models, does the model ever say, it was weird we were hired for a photo shoot, but yet the photos were being taken from a plane, like 15,000 feet above our head?
Yeah. Well, the crazy thing about that is, like, if I'm a model and I've gone in for this casting and I'm only told, like, you have to wear this pink fedora and they're going to shoot you from the plane. Like, I could basically be anyone. I could be a man. I could be anyone. And then to come back another day to that very shoot. So that model, both of those models come back for another day of work.
By the way, they're self-directing themselves too, because, you know, Tanya's up in the plane. There's nobody on the ground saying, like, now run into his arms, dude. Like, there's
and
so
I'm
much.
Assuming it's all single take.
Well, I mean, that has to be because that plane is going overhead. You got one shot to make it. I mean,
that woman
it
is
was
like
timed
shit.
Perfectly.
Shit, I was going to put that on my reel. Because, you mean it was part of a murder plot?
Because literally, not only was it timed perfectly, but if you remember, Jake is in the plane with her, and she's like, and it doesn't he even say, like, oh, I think my house is over there. And she's like, oh, let's go see it.
He says, oh, this is my neighborhood. My house should be right.
Huh?
And then he sees. And meanwhile, Tanya, again, because they don't trust you, Tanya is, it's a tight shot of Tanya being like, click, click, click. She holds the phone in front of her face to text. It is so, there is so little subtlety to this. It's amazing.
Tanya, oh my God. But the Ring doorbell commercial, I just want to hit that for one more time because she does look at it as if she has, this character has, like, this, they treat the Ring doorbell like you would treat a transporter room in Star Trek to someone who's never seen it. It's like, oh no, this is a device that can actually tell you who's at your door. It's got a camera. Oh, wow. Really? Yeah, it's been here like this. Now, I have a Ring doorbell. I will tell you, it's not recording 200 feet across the street because it would never stop recording. It would just be a nonstop.
Well, she even has to say, the woman who's the neighbor has to say, my husband is a tech geek and he disabled the motion sensor. So it's just been recording for most of the last month.
And why
did
would
he
you
do that?
Do that?
Why would he ever do that?
And then she's like, good luck at sifting through literally thousands of hours of footage.
she also is like, again, keep in mind, Annie's mother has just died. Her marriage has imploded.
By suicide.
Oh,
and the
why was that suicide?
Like,
that was
the
not.
The neighbor is, I know, right? And the neighbor is like, oh my God, this is just like one of those detective shows. You're having so much fun. I was like, what? You are reading this situation so wrong, neighbor.
I love that neighbor, though. She was a breath of fresh. I mean, she was so strange and odd as she could be. I wanted her to have more screen time. I mean, Annie and Jake are such duds that the fact that I had to watch them for as long as I did, was the only downside for me.
Annie and Jake, after the funeral, which they couldn't afford a church, so they just show you an exterior of a church and give you a voiceover while...
While the service is happening,
you don't get to go inside. Then you just see them standing. By the way, there are clear. I mean, maybe I'm. Well, I believe that they're clearly standing in a one bedroom apartment, but their exterior is a very big house. Like, because it's like that's like the apartment on Insecure that they're in, and then you cut out. But then when they're fighting after the funeral, like I was like, oh, there's something here. There's something. Maybe like that was the most life I saw out of that couple.
Now, why do you think? Well, two questions. Margaret's body, after it has fallen from the sky, it must have been...
The puddle of Margaret?
Yeah, it really must have been. I mean, I don't know what happens to a body when it falls 50,000 feet, 30,000 feet.
I mean, I don't know how high assessment, but I think that...
They don't go that high.
It can't go that high, but it probably, I'm going to say like 10,000 feet.
10 or 15,
feet, sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, and you imagine the camera that you would have to have, by the way, if she's even 15,000 feet in the air to get those shots. The lens would have to be so, it would be like the camera that you would use on the Goodyear blimp. Like the Goodyear blimp, like, okay, for whatever. But that camera, that lens would
no,
be.
No, Paul, please get into blimp talk. You said you wanted to talk about blimps.
I've been trying so hard to get Earwolf to approve that show. But no, I mean, like, I just, again, the lens that you would have on that camera to get any sort of anything going on there.
I loved that. I will return to it. I loved that Margaret shows up, screams at Tanya, and then they get into a plane and are just like hanging out together. Like they're going to be buddies. And then Tanya straight up kicks her out of the plane. This is where, for me, I was like, okay, how does Tanya think she's going to get away with something here? Like, this woman clearly has fallen from a great height. So that when Annie is at home and receives just a cold call from the coroner's office.
Coroner.
Just to basically confirm that your mother is dead. Like, it's not... It's
the
not
call
the police.
Is haunting.
It's not the police calling to say we have terrible news or people showing up to say, I'm so sorry, please take a seat.
No decorum in this movie about death. It's just like,
hey
done.
Annie so-and-so, Margaret's your mother. Yeah, so anyway, what do you want to do with her body? She's like totally splatted over here. What do we do?
By the way, here's my thought. If she fell from that plane, there is no way they identified that body that quickly. Because like what you said.
No, the blazer.
Yeah.
They identified it by the tartan blazer.
That's how they found the body too. It was like we saw a weird blinding light out in a field because they said that she like
we saw bagpipes falling from the sky and it turned out it was a human being.
She was. Did they say that she like was fell in the gutter of a building? Like they made it.
No, they said she jumped to her death.
Yeah, they thought she committed suicide because she was near a building that people have in the past jumped off of to commit.
And
suicide.
By the way, what amazing flight skills Tanya would have to get in that exact position if that was
or
her whole plan.
Dumb luck? You presume it's dumb. That can't be her
again,
plan because
again, she kicked
it's
her,
random.
Again, she must have kicked her out of the airplane only a minute after they got out of the thing because that planes do fly a great distance quickly. So we are led to believe that they've been up there for a long time, but it seems like she committed suicide right in town.
Yeah. It was that Margaret's death thing. I was like, Tanya is really playing fast and loose here because there's no way people aren't going to be like, well, she clearly fell from the sky. The fact that Annie and Jake, no red flags are raised ever. None of them ever considers, you know, there's a lot of super chaotic, crazy stuff that's happening in our lives right now. Why is this happening? Like, the lines of communication between them are not working.
Well, I mean...
Their marriage is flawed.
No, and it doesn't get better because at the end, you know, like everything happens at the end. She gets arrested and then we cut, I would imagine, months later when...
Weeks. It's two weeks later, they say.
When Jacob... 2 weeks later, wow. He's buying an airplane. He's buying an airplane at the end.
And well, my question was, why did Margaret, after all that, leave her inheritance to Jake?
Because she probably didn't get a chance to change the will.
Yeah, or it went to Annie. I'm not sure. The other thing that Jake's plan is to sell the lighting business mm-hmm. and buy a $15,000 plane. Are you telling me Margaret's entire business is only worth the like? Then that business has failed.
Basically,
if the liquid assets of Lighting Incorporated, Margaret's Lighting, whatever it's called, is $15,000.
I mean, listen, I had questions about Margaret's Lighting Incorporated because she was going to Santa Barbara for investors in the business. Like,
is she like a Marcus Lemon? Like a Marcus Lemonis? I mean, like she, like is she? Hey, you know, like Marcus Lemonis.
We needed Marcus Lemonis to get involved in every business depicted in this movie. I think Marcus Lemonis could have helped Tanya's flight school, Gonzo's flight school,
merge them.
Margaret's Lighting Incorporated, everything.
But, you know, Tanya would not take well to Marcus making all the decisions. Like that, you know.
Well, you know, he's 100% in charge.
We identified him by the belt buckle.
I love Marcus.
He's the best, and we've been trying to get him on the show. Wants to do the show. We should do it now in quarantine for sure.
We got it. We should do an episode. We should do a movie that's about a failing business.
I would love it. Wait. So yes. So she's going to meet investors late night. And I also had an issue with
Santa
Barbara.
What are they investing in, though?
You know,
she's a family business. But she says, here's the one thing I did like about the movie, that it did flip that narrative of like the father leaving a business to the son on its head, where she, I don't know what happened to Annie's dad, but at one point she says she built the business with her husband and is now looking for the heir and looking to, you know, keep her legacy going. That was interesting to me. Like, there's some choices the movie makes where I'm like, oh, wow, this is not anything I've seen before.
What was interesting to me, too, was all of the female characters have real engines, real things driving them, right?
But it wouldn't pass the Bechdel test.
Yes, they wouldn't pass the Bechdel test. That's true. But they are all like the idea that Margaret is like Margaret has inherited Jake, her son-in-law, as the person that she but she openly is disdainful of him and dismissive of his intelligence, his everything. She hates him. And so what I couldn't.
But his wife hates him, too. His wife literally says, like, how can you be a pilot? You have to be good at math and like and physics.
She's not wrong. She's not wrong.
She has
You guys, honestly, would you if Paul, no offense, but if you said to me today, I want to fly a plane, I would. And I'm going to walk into this conversation as delicately as possible. Mm-hmm. But I would say that's absolutely reckless. And I don't trust you up there with your own life. And I don't trust you up there with the lives of others in that plane and innocent lives on the ground.
All right.
I think flying, I mean this honestly, I think flying, the act of flying, defying gravity, is not for amateurs.
Didn't we have this conversation, Jason? Like you and I,
we did on a different show.
Okay, yes.
It's not a hobby to fly a plane.
I don't
want to
be a part-time pilot.
It's not a hobby. You know what? When my friend, because we have friends who have planes, and I've been invited up, and my stance is: listen, you are too funny. You're too good as a comedian. Yep. You're too good at something.
Pick your lane.
You are good enough at this that you can't also be a good enough pilot. So that must mean I'm not interested in flying with a hobbyist.
Yeah, I don't want to see my internist show up at an improv show because he really cares about his improv group. Like, I want you to be dead down the middle. I operate on people or I do improv comedy at night. Like, I don't want your passion to be anything else. I want you to be like,
I don't want my doctor to be like a pretty good jazz guitarist.
Yep. Nope.
You know, I don't want to come to your show, man.
We've had this conversation before.
Yeah, I think we've talked about
Leonardo da Vinci was an amazing artist and also a doctor.
Wait, oh,
sure.
Okay, sure. All right, well, that was in a time when you could
That's
do that
a time when what it he was a, what it was to be a doctor yeah. was to know someone's was to know someone's
to know like
humors.
Where the heart
yeah,
was.
Get some leeches and just make them bleed out. Stop. Yeah, like
was to be like, I think there's a spirit in his leg.
Yeah, that back then it was fine to be a couple of different things.
He was not a brain surgeon.
Yeah, no, no. Yeah, I would like to see a record of.
But no shade to Leonardo da Vinci. I mean, truly like an unparalleled genius in history, like a singular, one of the old, like a unique individual.
Well, the question then becomes, what do we think of John Travolta? Is he a better pilot or a better actor?
I mean, like, I'm going to be honest. If I was sitting on a plane and they were like, hey, everybody, great news. John Travolta is going to join us as a guest pilot. I would be like, ding, I'm ready to get off the plane.
I don't want it. I don't want it.
Listen, Harrison Ford has a death wish. I mean, he has crashed those planes a number of times now.
I guess maybe that's the reason why she survived. I mean, she's got Harrison Ford body. I mean,
I think actors who want to be pilots want the captive audience. I think it speaks to their desire to be like still the focus of some group of people's attention, and that they are the heroes of the day. Like when John Travolta is like, I can fly a 727 full of people. I'm like, you shouldn't.
Yeah.
This is irresponsible.
Yeah. Don't buy a jet.
Something happens though. Yeah. I mean, something happens with celebrity where because so many people know them, because they feel like they have this position in the world, that people feel like they can do anything. It's really very strange. Meaning like run for president. Look, they can do anything.
What if I said to you, like, guys, I just enrolled in medical school. Like, I'm still going to do all my acting stuff, but I'm doing my hours, and I'm going to be able to in a couple of years.
Kim Kardashian, like, right? She's going to school to be a lawyer.
Well, but by the way, here's the thing.
I don't know.
I can get behind that 100%. And I have an interest in going to law school, so I'm just going to say that.
Okay,
right,
Jerry
now.
O'Connell. Jerry O'Connell, right after we finished Piranha, went to law school.
Well, there are certain things like law school, med school, like the system will decide whether you're ready to practice.
Right.
Or not.
I guess. Yeah, maybe. I guess so. Yeah.
With flying, there are a certain amount of hours you have to log before you get up there. And there is a system in place. However, there is, after you get those hours, you can go up recreationally willy nilly. If you're a doctor, you know,
you can't be like, hey, I did my hours. I'm ready to to pull out some appendix.
And by the way, if you become a lawyer, you're not going to kill everybody and yourself by trying a case or dealing with a con.
That's not true. I mean,
it depends on if it's a death penalty.
Wow. Well, you think that like people are going to go right to death penalty cases? I guess maybe you're right.
I think Kim Kardashian could be trying death penalty cases within the next few
years. All right. Well, now you've laid down the gauntlet. Like, all right. Well, then I hope that she, and maybe this is the step in the right direction. The Kardashians are over.
Kardashians have been working to get people off of death row.
Off of death row, sure. But not. Yeah. Okay. Sure.
Now that the Kardashians is wrapping up,
R.I.P.
maybe
I'm
that is
quite upset
the next.
R.I.P.
Maybe that's the next show. You know, the next show is like Kim Kardashian. It's a law show where she is, you know, a lawyer, and I would watch
that. Like that when they did that amazing Law and Order. A reality show. It was like the real Law and Order. It was
I didn't know about this.
It was a Dick Wolf produced show where they followed. It was just the real version of the show,
like a docuseries about that. Oh,
it was really good, but I guess not too good because it didn't last. But anyway, we've talked about this, so I guess we can all say that actor pilots are worse than actor musicians.
Listen, here's the question. Would you rather take a 2.5 hour flight that John Travolta is piloting or watch a 2.5 hour 30 seconds from Mars concert?
Oh, God, that's such a tough one.
Well, look, I mean, John Travolta has put in a lot of hours, and I feel like
both are potentially fatal.
I mean, John Travolta I don't think he's had any crashes or accidents. Harrison Ford has crashed, I think, 2 planes.
Oh, more.
2 planes in the last 5
years.
Yeah,
I mean, he's always crashing.
That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean,
when did they revoke your license?
Well, that's the other thing that seems weird. Like, why hasn't his license been revoked?
I don't know.
And I believe both of them were caused by his earring.
By the way, so to Deadly Mile High Club, do we ever get to see his friend Tom's house? Or, I mean, meet his friend Tom?
No, but we...
We never meet Tom, but we are in his house.
With his spare room.
When I just Googled Harrison Ford, and they don't even give you a number. They just say, Harrison Ford has been involved in a series of crashes and near crashes while flying aircraft.
I like it's a series, like it's like episodes of a TV show.
Yeah,
I'm going to binge all of Harrison Ford's crashes.
In 2015, he landed a World War II airplane on a golf course after the engine failed. In 1999, during a flight lesson, he crash landed a helicopter. In 2000, his six-seater Beechcraft Bonanza scraped the runway during an emergency landing. But they say he's an excellent pilot.
Wow. Well, the numbers would tell a different story.
I love Harrison Ford.
Me too.
But if Harrison Ford said, Hey, Jason, I want you to come up. I'd love to fly you to Catalina or whatever. I would be like, bro, no way. I'll take the ferry and I will meet you there.
I won't get in a prop plane. I remember when I had to go to Shreveport.
What about the prop plane that we had to get to the Bride Wars premiere?
Oh, yeah.
They looked at our bodies.
I was very upset about that.
They looked at our bodies and put us in seats based on what they thought we weighed. It was one of the most nerve-wracking things. Yeah. You did not want to do it. We were like carrying like luggage needed to be weighed. Everyone needed to be weighed. Everyone was put in these different positions. We flew into a storm where there was no divider between the seats and the pilot. It was one of the most nerve-wracking flights I've ever had.
That was very bad, Paul. That was very bad, and we should not have done that.
No, I mean, like, those little planes are not to be...
It was worth it for me to go back and get that $150 haircut.
I'll never do it again.
Wait, how about the fact...
Without an engine.
How about the fact that when...
It has an engine.
When Annie finally...
It's a jet. You never fly without a jet engine is what you're saying.
I'm sorry. I will never fly without a jet.
You don't want an engine. You don't want an engine that you have to physically like start.
Motored by oars.
Yeah. Oars? Sky oars? Do you think
propellers are sky oars? June was in a Hanna-Barbera cartoon for the first part of her life. June was in Wacky Races aircraft.
Oh, well, we gotta keep working. Heave,
dastardly.
Work those sky oars. Dastardly and mumbling. Yeah, I was gonna say when Tanya clobbers Jake with the fire extinguisher and jumps out of the plane with her parachute on, which, by the way, she is not wearing a parachute. She's just wearing a backpack. She puts on what looks to me like a Mission Workshop backpack, which is hilarious, and jumps out the plane. But Annie then unscrews herself, gets out of the coffin, and Annie starts flying the plane.
Well, she just grabs onto it. Not well.
She grabs and she's not well, but still, she also does it. The movie posits that flying is doable. Even if you haven't even if you've never flown.
Listen, Jason, if I was thrown in there.
Here we go.
I think I could get something done.
June. You think you could get something done?
What do you think you could get done realistically?
I think that I would know. I mean, Annie's trouble was she didn't even know how to work that.
No, the first thing that you would do, June, is you would get... You would get
let June explain what
I want to hear what she's going to do, but I would say the first thing that you would do, June, is you would get into that cockpit and you would spend 7 to 10 minutes figuring out the seat to your liking. That would be the majority. Like, we would be into a mountain by the time you've finally got it right adjusted.
Annie doesn't even do the movie trope of like putting on the headphones, reaching the tower, and being like, can you talk me through this? She doesn't even do that.
Seem like there is a lot of communication between the pilots and the tower in this movie. Like, never talk to air traffic control.
What would you do in there? I want to hear you.
Well, the first thing I would do is I would look for the autopilot button.
Great.
It usually says autopilot on it.
But by the way,
that immediately to buy myself a little time.
Then I think you're absolutely right. That is.
Wait, but does that work like
only
that?
Move.
Does it work like that? There's
In the movie,
it does.
It did.
Okay.
In the movie, yes, it did. Because Tanya both turns the autopilot on and off. And there is, if you weren't smart enough, again, to notice that's what she was doing, they have an audio cue that says autopilot on, autopilot off.
Oh my God.
Just in case you're that fucking dumb.
This really is getting to me, this movie. I love it so much.
When Annie's in the box.
Her coffin.
When Annie's in
she
the box.
She brought a coffin to her house. She knew.
And Jake is holding the box with the plane door open, saying, should I throw it out? And Tanya's like, throw it out. Get rid of it. Just toss it. She's so casual about it. And he goes, hey, is this box biodegradable? You know how I feel about litter. I was like, when has that been? This is the one thing you've never established.
That was my favorite part.
You've never established.
You know how I feel about litter. And why would he? Why would she know? Why would that come up? Like, and why would you say litter? Like, that wouldn't be a thing. Like,
that's the substance of their conversations. That means at one point, maybe post-coital, he was like, you know what I hate? Litter. You know what makes me absolutely nuts is littering. Like, that's one of his passions. That's one of the things that really gets his goat.
Not like I care about the environment. I just hate litter. And by the way, he's asking way too many questions about this, I mean, wood box that is so suspect. Like, it makes...
By the way, if you're that concerned, if it's biodegradable, guy, it's wood. Yes.
Well, the question
answer,
that she never, yes. Yeah, it is. But the question that she never answers and he never asks is, how does this box of marine life food
mm-hmm.
that is locked with a
open?
Padlock?
Yeah,
yes, it's
open?
Locked with a padlock. How do they get to
I think
it?
The idea was that it would hit the ground so hard that it would break open and the pellets would just fly out.
It's hitting the water.
But then why not just actually just throw it out without a lid on it?
Well, I mean, that's what he was trying to do. But she was like, no, because look, she made up a bad lie on the spot.
But this is so strange. He just wanted to see the food.
June is onto something right here. Because he, even in the cockpit, the minute he heard that the food was little GPS
it.
Trackers, he was,
so
it piqued
weird.
His interest.
Oh, they're eating little mini Wazes? They're eating little...
The most
Jarmans?
Interested in anything Jarmans. He was in this movie was to see that fish food. He wanted to get
that's
his
when he
peepers.
Really came alive. There was a sparkle
he
real,
that was his like actor's secret was like, I really wish I'd been a marine biologist, and that's the thing I care about the most.
But by the way, this couple, I mean, she is flying so low over the ocean, like outside the window, they are 7 feet,
away.
Yeah, 7 feet at the most above the water. Like, she's doing some dangerous, dangerous flying, and that's on a jet. She's flying at 7 feet above
Fast.
The water on a jet.
Yeah.
And then she, like, switches her story that they're
for
sharks.
And he's hanging out by the open door.
Yeah.
He's hanging out by the open door like nothing is going on. He would be pulled out easily.
They're having a full-on conversation without even raising their voice. She's in the
Which
cockpit.
Would be literally impossible. She's in the cockpit wearing headphones.
June and I are in the same house right now, and I guarantee you she wouldn't hear me if I called her down the hallway.
Let's try it.
June. Well, I mean, this is hard.
Yeah, I couldn't hear you. I mean, I can hear you, of course, through the headphones, but I couldn't hear you.
You know what? We have just... this makes as much sense as the movie. This reenactment... Like, this reenactment, if you wrote it up, they would be like, yeah, we'll shoot that. That makes sense.
Oh, my God. This, I mean, there...
It felt like we were honestly in the movie.
The fact that... So when she jumps out, she parachutes down. Then, as we described, they have the North by Northwest where they buzz her mm-hmm. and knock her unconscious, and the police get her. And then we cut to... 2 weeks later, where he's buying the Cessna with, I'm assuming, Margaret's Lighting Incorporated's money, $15,000. He appears to be counting it out into like $1,000, $2,000, $1,000. Like,
there's so much cash exchange, like large amounts.
No banks or cell phones in this movie for the most part. I think cell phones are used like once.
The guy whose story I care about the most in the whole movie. Is this man who's selling his grandfather's plane?
No, you know who I think that was?
Who?
I think that was Jake One's son.
Oh. And he had to use all that money for the funeral and costs that he ensued?
What?
No.
I thought that that's where they were going.
I think that they were trying to show you something.
Jake One is too young.
I think at the end, what I was hoping for was that guy was going to walk away when Jake makes the big... the big moment, the like when you're like, oh my, like you think that Jake is going to be like, you know what? I don't want to fly anymore. Keep the plane and the 15,000. We're out of here, honey. And they go. But he's like, hey, I'll let you fly it whenever you want. And I thought that that guy was going to turn to camera and his eyes were going to like light up. And he's like, now I'm Tanya. Like now he's going to haunt their life or something like that. I thought like that was like, oh, passing the torch,
I mean,
to another.
I think that that's what happened a little bit, that he was going to get on another Deadly Mile High Club type plane.
I mean, I would love that if the next movie is that guy becomes obsessed with Jake. Or,
oh my gosh. And then Jake
and Annie's like, is this for real happening again?
I've always wanted to explore my sexuality and I never got a chance to do it. Just let me do it. And she's like, yeah. It's so hard though. You have to put it in different things and do different things.
He's like, Jake, I want to take the plane out this weekend to remember my grandfather, Jake.
Wait, did he say his grandfather or his father?
He said he learned how to fly from his father who learned from his
and
father.
And that plane so had two, been in their family.
It's been in,
that's a home.
Yeah,
that so plane
I
is a
think
home.
His father is Jake One.
Jake One looks
I think
too,
Jake One was too young.
Yeah, it didn't seem like Jake.
I love.
Yeah, I think that Jake One didn't seem married.
Well.
Or previously
you
married.
You can have children out of wedlock, Paul.
Good call.
Jake
good
One
call.
And Tanya.
You,
I don't know. I think Jake.
Like, I mean, he wasn't father material is what I'm saying.
I think that guy seems to be in his like 20s and Jake One is at like 35, you know?
Yeah, that Jake Two. I mean, it was a weird. By the way, if you're writing this movie and that's your postscript, you're like, okay, why am I introducing this whole other element
that's
here?
That's what I'm saying. Why else?
And then
I think I like the idea that it introduces perhaps the antagonist of the sequel.
Well, I mean, I'm all for a sequel. But here's the thing that I thought was so odd. We talked about it earlier, that their relationship is flawed. They wait about 2 weeks for him to go, oh, yes, and by yes. the way, just want to tell yeah, you right
there's
now.
There's something I got to tell
yeah,
you.
Yeah, I slept with her. Like, okay. And then like, what? That wasn't like... That wasn't in the first post mortem.
I understood waiting a few weeks.
What
June? No. This woman was in a car.
They've just been through. This woman killed her mother.
That's the best way to get out of it.
Put her in a coffin. Tried to get her out of it. He could have.
But that's
could've...
my point. There's so much that Annie has to process. Like, just give her a second to recover. Come down from the chloroform.
Jake,
come down from being locked in a box and having Jake.
But Jake
fuck Tanya above her.
But
like
that was crazy.
There's a lot that's gone on here.
I don't think he was mentioning that one. Like, I think he was going to just
I don't
keep
think
that.
He said the
no,
specifics.
He said Santa Barbara. He said Santa Barbara. I feel
but,
like yeah.
I just feel like he was out of respect for her, giving her a second to wrap her mind around a few things.
But she
and
didn't.
Then let her know, like, hey, what well, we weren't together.
But by the way, she also needs to reveal to him. By the I found out that it was another woman who was a model, and that's what you must have seen, because he doesn't ever get that information.
Yes. That she must have explained, because she has the she understands
true.
The frame,
right?
Right. She so in the after the plane, you know, once they land the Gulfstream, she must explain to him, like, I found on the Ring doorbell this video of this Tanya framed me that I never cheated on you. Wouldn't he in that point be like,
oh my
oh,
god,
boy.
No, he could be like, oh Uh-oh. My god, she showed me this footage that you cheated on me. So in an attempt to kind of get back at you, I slept with her. Boom, done.
Yeah.
You don't like sit on that. You don't sit on that for later. That's the moment you reveal it.
You don't sit
it.
On that after you've sold her dead mother's business and bought your own plane.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, and then she does this very interesting reveal at the end. I mean,
amazing.
Well, that's what, okay. So I think what he might have been trying to do was just sort of like take the energy out of the moment to not make it a huge, like just take some of the.
Just throw it away.
Just throw it away. Because. To put too much weight on it, to sit her down and say, like, listen, this is what happened here. Let's go through the course of events. Makes it seem like this was a big deal to him. Well, and I don't think it was. And he was just sort of saying, like, oh, by the by, like, that happened.
But to me, it seemed like the fact that he waited this long for that to put that piece of the puzzle in place seems like my reaction, if I'm Annie in that instance, would be like, how did you leave that out of everything we experienced two
right.
weeks ago? How did you not, like, how have you not given me, how, like, what I would say, what else haven't you told me?
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, what else are you still hiding, Jake? you dull moron.
But by the way, he seems to be most intrigued by her when she's like, I fucked my professor. Or did she? We don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, and do we think that she did?
I think she did. Well, I told you my thought was, I thought perhaps that poolside scene actually her.
Right.
So I believe her because, yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. Annie is a lot of things in this movie. None of them is a liar. Annie tells the truth. She's like Margaret. She's a straight shooter.
Well, look,
she is. She's her mother's daughter.
Is this box biodegradable? You know how I feel about litter. I mean, it's amazing.
Well, look, we clearly have an opinion about this movie that it's awesome. And people agree with us. So it is now time for second opinions.
The movie was a piece of shit, yet this person recommends it. Tell me, what is the message? Subjective. I need a second opinion.
I'll be honest with you. Nate Kiley said there is not many at all, and he's very right. There are really only two reviews up. So we have to go to IMDb. So these are 10-star reviews from IMDb.
Nice.
And then, all right, so this is kind of, I believe these people are people that people in the Lifetime world know, because this one is like a fast-paced Lifetime movie. Watching Diane Robin and Allison McAtee on screen together was a delight. 10 stars. And then the people go on and say, this is a funny, lighthearted movie with a suspenseful edge to it. And it says this, like, the outstanding performance in this movie is Diane Robin. She stole the show. Allison McAtee also has a great range of emotions. Two women made the movie. 10 stars. And then it really gets into, this is a movie that is capturing people's imaginations here. This one right here, Deadly Mile High Club was everything I want in a Lifetime movie. This cast had one dreamy actress after another that was balanced out by a constantly shirtless Mark Herman. The cast also delivers the goods acting-wise. They all give strong performances, especially Diane Robin. Robin is terrific in this movie. There are thrills, including cheap ones galore, in this film. Sometimes a Lifetime movie feels rushed towards the end. This one didn't. The story develops in a very satisfying way. The story is very different and very well told. Deadly Mile High Club is a top-notch movie. Lifetime or not. 9 stars. The best Lifetime movie of 2020 so far is the title. So this one didn't go full on with the 10 stars. That's a 9-star review, but pretty full.
But very positive. And I'm going to be controversial here and say I don't disagree.
I loved it.
Like, I don't disagree, because I agree with the sentiment behind both of these reviews, which is especially the woman playing Tanya. Is that McAtee? Is that the woman that plays Tanya?
Yes, it is.
Thank you. I thought she was terrific. You know, like, she really, like, because there's so little life to what's going on oftentimes, it's so much exposition is being spoken, so much, it takes so long for actual things to happen. She's doing a lot. She's carrying a lot of the momentum simply based on her chaotic performance.
Well, I'm going to tell you.
I enjoyed that.
She is somebody I'm going to keep my eye on, because she's currently shooting a movie. I don't know what it's going to be about, but it's called Mommune, which it seems like a mom commune. And so I would like to see Mommune.
No, she is one to watch.
Yes, she is one to watch.
Yeah.
And I really enjoyed her performance.
She was also in a movie called, and maybe we need to do this one, Deadly Daughter Switch. That was back to back. She was in Deadly Mile High Club and Deadly Daughter Switch.
I want to watch that right now.
Oh my gosh. Deadly Daughter Switch. It says, when Brooke discovers her daughter, Haley, isn't actually her biological daughter, their family is thrown into crisis as they realize Haley was switched at birth with Brooke's biological daughter, Brianne.
Whoa.
Wow. All right, so
huge. I want to watch. I want every. But this movie reminded me of, and I'm not going to remember the name of it, but we did it, and it was a Katherine Heigl movie.
Oh, with Gerard Butler? No.
No. Wasn't Katherine Heigl in one of these, like, she was trying to ruin someone's life?
Oh, yes, the one with...
Unbreakable, Unforgettable.
Yes, yeah, that one. Something. Yes, where it was, like, where she was going after her husband.
She was great.
Yes, Whitney Cummings was in it.
This reminded me of that, in a way, and now that I've just found out
Unforgettable.
You're just saying that it's a Lifetime movie. I didn't know this was a Lifetime movie because I watched it on Amazon.
Yeah, me too.
I just thought it was, I didn't realize it was. So I kept watching it being like, ooh, I'm really enjoying this, but it is. There was a part of me that was like, I kind of want Katherine Heigl to parachute into this movie because like her version of this would be incredible.
I would love it. So I guess we're all saying across the board, I mean, we would recommend this is worth the rental
definitely.
Fee. I mean, the $2.99 rental fee. This is worth it.
You got to watch it for the fedoras alone. If you're a fan of Hard Pink, you got to watch
this movie.
By the way,
can I just say, if you're looking for a Halloween costume, Halloween is coming up. This is the family of costumes that you should have. You should go out with three friends. One should play the guy and two should play the girl. And then you can bring in the mom there too. These are costumes that are built for Halloween. I want to see people dressing up as Deadly Mile High Club for Halloween. I love this idea, as a matter of fact. Get yourself a Henley. Yeah. Get yourself a tartan blazer. Get yourself a pink hat, and you are ready to go.
Oh, my God.
A backpack.
100%.
Get yourself a hard pink hat, and then also get yourself like a light pink sweatshirt.
By the way, I want to dress up as the model with the hard pink hat. So people are like, oh, are you playing Annie? No, I'm playing the model who was hired.
Like, get together with a group of friends. Get together with a group of friends so that there can be a Margaret, there can be a Tanya,
there can be a Gonzo.
A Gonzo.
The stewardess has so many great roles. This has been so fun talking about this movie with you. I was so giddy.
Houston, we have a problem.
I was so giddy last night when I was watching this because it was the palate cleanser that I needed. It's a movie that I kind of love to do on the show. And with that, I will just say, what are our plugs? What are you going to talk about? Anything coming to top of mind?
Oh, man. Just November is upon us. I just encourage everybody to make sure that they are registered to vote. Make sure that they have requested their ballot in the mail, depending on where they live, if they want to either drop it off or mail it in. And also check in on your friends and neighbors and parents, and send a quick text to them too to make sure that they are registered to vote and have everything they need to get that ballot in the mail.
Yeah. Motivate your extended circle of people. Get kick people's ass.
And if you want to be even more of a voting superstar, while you are concerned about the national election, look around what's going on locally. Look at the judges that are there. Look at the bills that are being passed. Understand what the bills are, because sometimes they're worded in a way to confuse you. Because local, you can really affect a lot of local change too. So I think that's so important, to make sure you register to vote.
And a lot of flight instructors and FAA workers are elected positions. So
you gotta know.
Know who you are electing to teach our actors how to fly.
And just one more thing I'll say. Rob Hubel and I have been doing these shows raising money for charity. Jason was on the one that we just last did on Twitch. You can check out some of the clips from that on my Twitch page. And we're still raising money there. We've been raising money for the Red Cross. We're going to be raising money for When We All Vote. So come check out these free shows that we're doing on Twitch. You don't have to be a Twitch member. You can watch it just like you're watching YouTube or anything else. And that's happening on Twitch. So check it out. This has been so much fun chatting with you. A big thank you to our engineer, Devin, our producer, Cody, our producer, Avril, who are picking this amazing film. Of course, Molly Reynolds, July Diaz, and Nate Kiley for doing the service of finding IMDb reviews here this week, trying to find something from nothing with this movie, because it is pretty underground. Thank you all for listening, and we will see you next week on a mini episode, so you can bring up any of your points about flight school. You can also talk to me about your life. You can hear a little bit of Jason and I do some Quar talk, all this and more. And June, you actually have a special mini episode coming out as well, right?
Yes, I'm not sure exactly when it's coming out, but we are going to, I have a very special conversation that I just recorded this past week with some of my Jane Club conspirators, people who have helped create the community with me, our chief equity and inclusion officer and our chief community engagement officer. So we have a really great conversation specifically around community and diversity and equity. And I thought it was really great. So I'm excited to share it with everyone.
so much going on. I can't wait to get into more about this movie. Maybe even give me a recommendation of another movie like this that we could talk about. So we'll see you next week on a mini episode.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Blah, blah, morning good.
Your breakfast sandwich,
Where's
sir.
Where's the Puff Patrol?
Here, Mr. President.
Dress me, paint me, do my hair. You got 1 minute.
Mr. President, the Joint Chiefs are waiting in the Situation Room.
No, no.
The incident in Michigan has escalated overnight.
Mm-hmm.
Early this morning, we received images of hog-tied liberal politicians being held against their will in the Michigan State House.
Uh-huh.
The militias maintained occupancy of the building for the past 24 hours.
Mm-hmm.
The local police have refused to act. The National Guard is on alert, and you have not recommended any action.
What's it called?
Sir?
The militia. What's it called?
First is us, Mr. President. First is us.
Oh, that's a good name.
Yes, a good name. Not advanced grammatically, but direct.
And they like us?
Yes, sir. They're big supporters.
So what's the problem?
Well, they've seized a government building, Mr. President.
Mm-hmm.
This is a grave situation. This is something we have to seriously consider as something we haven't seriously considered before.
No.
This is an actual uprising of armed people.
Yeah.
People that love us and support our policies, yes.
Mm.
But they've seized a government building and are trying to force the democratically elected representatives out of office.
And the problem is?
These people with the guns were not elected. Sir.
Blah, 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 blah. Lots of words. Leave them alone. They're patriots.
Our breaking news, an FBI raid. The federal government saying it's tied to a stunning plot to kidnap Governor Whitmer.
The FBI and Michigan State Police arrested six individuals.
One of the organizers said that he needed 200 men to carry this out, to storm that building, take hostages.
Several members talked about murdering tyrants.
FBI agents armed with search warrants busting people all across the state.
Babbo Supreme, an oral cinema podcast in 5 parts. Written, directed, and produced by Tim Robbins. Original music by David Robbins. Featuring Robbins, Jack Black, Isla Fisher, Alfre Woodard, Ray Wise, Ted Levine, Patton Oswalt, Haley Jo Osment, Rita Brent, Tom Lennon, Carrie Kenny Silver, Ricky Lindholm, Mary Beth Monroe, and Sashir Zameda. Episodes are available to our subscribers on October 8th. Please visit patreon.com/Tim Robbins Presents.